We get things underway by welcoming in writer Colin Fleming. Hello, Colin.
Twos are wild, Kimball.
Yes, indeed. How's your day been? Have you been assaulting the steps at BC?
Today I have ran 6 miles, written many letters to people who hate me, composed an op-ed, taped a podcast, and now I am here with you. We're a duo, a dyad. Twos again, baby.
I like that very much. Talk a little bit about the podcast, because it's a good show that you are on there now as a regular talking music.
Yeah, he's good, isn't he? The podcast is called Songs of Note, and I guess they just hit 10,000 downloads. Seems pretty good for a podcast. I think it started around November. And the premise of it is they discuss a single song. And so I've gone on and I've talked about Sam Cooke's Bring It On Home to Me, The Doors, 5 to 1. Today we did Zeppelin's When the Levee Breaks. And it's a 45-minute conversation, and it tracks how the song came together, its backstory, maybe its source material with something like When the Levee Breaks, because, as you know, that's an old Delta Blues song by Memphis Minnie, and it's good. You can really stretch out on there, and I enjoy it. I think he does a good job. He's well-prepared. The man's name is Ryan Gregg, and he's a nice man, and as with yourself, he's someone that I've become friendly with, so it's been a good thing.
Very cool. Well, a lot of things to cover, as always, today. Let's begin with the recently maligned Christopher Columbus.
Yeah, I'm not that far from Columbus Park here, and I'm at the waterfront right now, so you might hear some noise in the background where Statuary Columbus was beheaded. it's been removed. The body has been taken away. And I don't want to be like a Columbus shill, because I really don't have any skin in the whole Columbus. It's not like I'm a fan of Columbus per se. There's some, like, I like you, I rank things. I have explorers I like more than other explorers. But what I find galling is that people are completely unaware of a context in life that differs from the context of their own time. This seems so basic to me, and I understood this, like, when I was in second grade learning about Columbus. That was an age when you conquered or you were conquered. That was the way it went. That's how everyone looked at everything. And the people that you conquered had previously conquered somebody before you came along to do the conquering. And so I don't understand how people cannot. I do understand. It's because just our minds are constantly rotting. But I'll see someone, for instance, like protesting in England, right? And they're all, this was so wrong, and this is how things were. And then that person will not know who Winston Churchill was, and they'll be taken down to church. Like, isn't it just, that's remarkable. It's just people acting out of this insane aggro culture, internal aggro culture, and I find it, to me, it's the most concerning thing in our society right now. You saw the letter that I got, right?
Yes, I did.
Racism. I mean, what on earth is that? For the listeners out there, I got this email at my site, this letter at my site. Most things at my site are very nice. I guess this guy saw the John Coltrane piece in Jazz Times, and he writes me accusing me of systemic racism. Like, because I wrote about Coltrane? I've been writing about what I write about for, I was writing professionally in college. I've been doing this for a long time, even if I'm not some old guy yet. But it's like, what goes in somebody's brain to think, I'm going to go after this man here in the middle of the night? And it's similar to me to what I see happening with the whole Columbus was this bloodthirsty monster and this unique creature, and no one else was this bloodthirsty monster like he was.
I'm amused by the Columbus thing, only because it was a huge PR campaign by the Knights of Columbus that got him a national holiday anyway.
Yes, and then people want to cite that he went off course and everything, but it wasn't like the days of GPS, right? I mean, we moved a couple times when I was a kid. I was getting lost in the town for a while, right? So it's like, you're going across this ocean, and again, stumbles into this place, does all of this horrible, savage stuff to people. But what were your options at the time? I guess that's how I look at it. Like, just be subjugated? I mean, you really had those two choices. That was their, I don't want to say their political correctness, but that was their status quo. Just like our status quo is now to be scared about opening your mouth and saying something for fear, not that you're going to incriminate yourself that you're this bad person, but somebody is going to take and twist and mobilize people. I guess, I mean, it must enter your head, right? I'm sure it doesn't deter you in what you're going to do. But we see examples all the time now of people just saying rather benign things. They're expressing an opinion. And, yeah, Knights of Columbus and all the times that you, like, go to, like, a post-wedding, right, gathering in the Knights of Columbus place. And, yeah, I didn't even know that they were the ones who sort of lobbied to make it this holiday.
I'm a Ponce de Leon man myself because he wanted that Fountain of Youth, and I'm still searching for that.
It won't surprise you that I'm a Cortez guy.
No, of course not.
He's out there. He's out there doing the savagery, and everyone's like, "We're on your team, but you're going too far." And he turns to all his people. He goes, "Burn the boats!" You can't even go. I love that whole "burn the boat." I'm getting pumped up right now. I'm down near the water, man. I'm ready to go.
I can tell. We're talking with Colin Fleming. Let's move on to talk about a couple of classic Newhart episodes. I was so happy to have the chance to revisit them, to talk about them this afternoon, starting with one called "The Way We Think We Were."
Yes, Rue McClanahan, so Blanche, to you Golden Girls fans like myself, is George's ex-paramour, I guess you could call her,
yeah,
when they were quite young. So they've been apart for 31 years, and this show, of course, is set in Vermont, and when she was in high school or whatever, she was 18, I think, she moved to Montpelier, and that ended their relationship just a few towns over, or whatever it was.
Because she had gone to the big city.
Yes, and George didn't make this move to stop her, and she wanted him to, and life intercedes, and they drifted apart, and she comes back to Stafford, and she is there to see George, and he thinks that they can sort of pick up where they left off. And she's become cosmopolitan. She's not snooty or anything like that. She just is less provincial than George the handyman is. And he's kind of similar to who he was when he was in high school. It's one of the most, wouldn't you say, downbeat sitcom episodes you've seen. It's not like some sort of special theme episode, like on Different Strokes when they're molested and everything, and obviously that's downbeat. This was just in the normal run of the first season, and it's very sad. He tries to rekindle the romance, and he takes her to where this restaurant was that they used to go to, and now it's a shoe store, and they kind of just sit in the shoe store. There aren't a lot of laughs in the episode, and I think it's very true to life, and they're just kind of going to have this reunion, and that'll be it.
Yeah,
they'll move on.
And it shows how very subtle but complex Tom Poston's portrayal of George could be.
Yes, I agree. And this it's more interesting too because they haven't completely figured out the George character, right? So he has depth to him, but he's more bumpkinish than he's going to be. Like, later, he's going to get off, by the next season, like a tart one-liner.
Right.
Like he's sagacious. Here, he's a little sort of naive, bumpkin-y. And that plays to the advantage of the episode, I would say, here, because he tries sometimes to say, like, these lines to woo her, and they're just not... She says, "You were so funny." And he says something like, "You were so simple." Right? he's trying to romance her. And you just, in those lines, you can feel, and it registers on her face. She's a good actress. It registers on her face the disconnect between the two of them, right? And just like in a few years, she's going to be Blanche on Golden Girls, like 3 years later, I think. And I don't know, that they're even doing this in this episode, right? In the first season. It's taking a risk. I can't think of many other... It's almost like an episode of MASH.
Yeah, oh, yes.
You get that bittersweet,
But this wasn't MASH. This was supposed to be, it's Bob Newhart, and it's frivolity, but with wit. And there's something more to this particular episode.
And then they came right back with the very next episode and a terrific story about a friendship and our interpretations of it called The Visitors.
Yeah, that's something else, isn't it, this episode? So it's the next week, and they have this couple that they're friends with, the Newharts, the inn owners, as it were. And they had gone on, like, this holiday with them, and they were in England. And they think that they're really close with these people who are their age and everything. And the visitors of the title are going to come stay at the inn. But he's a line from Newhart in the show that they use it as this pit stop to go off and meet these other, these very garrulous people, this couple that they think are their great friends. And they hit it off with people, and they're what they describe themselves as, it's a great term, right? They're fun junkies. I mean, they're kind of like addicts for topical, senseless, uncommitted fun. They're almost like swingers without the sex.
Yeah.
And so Joanna and Bob, they're hurt. And so they have this like confrontation, and the guy of the couple, he says, you have this all, like, I'll explain it to you. It's simple. We're not your friend. And it's just like, who says this? Like, who wrote this? And like, what a strange moment in your living room, right? And Dick says, well, that's too simple. There must be something else to it. And the guy walks them through it. And it's like they're kind of really sort of cruel people. They do use, but they're suggestive of those people that we have in our life. Like, they're like good time Charlies that you couldn't rely on so much as like a ride home from the train at night, right? They'd like roll over, no, I'm already in bed, I don't want to, or they set the phone off. And it deals with something still relevant now that, again, you just don't see in a sitcom.
That was great stuff there. Let's move on to, and I was, when I saw you pick this one of my earliest memories of watching television is this episode you picked of Outer Limits from 1964 called Second Chance.
That makes a certain amount of sense, right? Because you would have known amusement parks, so that would resonate, right? That you're going, so the premise of this episode is, there's this guy, what is he? He's like an astrophysicist. He's something very sciencey. And he's disillusioned with his job because he doesn't want to create weapons to, like, blow people up. So to kill time, he goes down to this, sort of amusement park, like a park, and there's this spaceship. And it's not real, and you go and you sit in it, and he gives, like, these tours. It's all, like, screens and what a piece of the paper type of thing. You sit in there, it's like, oh, there's Venus. But there's actually an alien. He's working extra time, and he's turned it into a real ship. So he ends up abducting the alien, these people. And he's like, I've picked you. This is really great. I am totally hooking you up with an opportunity. And they're like, what's going on here? And he says, you screwed up your life. You don't do self-examination. You don't do growth. You're not self-actualized. He starts walking them through it. He said, you're going to go to this place, and an asteroid was going to run into it, but you're going to change its course just by being there, and it's going to work out well for my planet and for Earth. The asteroid won't strike either, and you can do the self-growth and get a second chance. What ends up happening after, like, someone gets sucked out into, like, space and dies and horribly and everything, what ends up happening is the guy, the astrophysicist guy, says, look, humans, they're not going to voluntarily change. Like, damn. I mean, the doctor says, like, one of the central problems of culture in 2020. He's like, you can't count on people to do self-reflection and change. These people aren't going to do it on their own, let alone with you kind of forcing them. We should go back. So then the alien's all depressed. He's like, yeah, you're right. It sucks. And they go back.
I love it. And Don Gordon, one of those guys who's just, no one knows him. But you see him, and he's one of those guys. You recognize him. And he's just great, especially in television episodes through the years. And he's so good in this.
He's one of those people where it's like, you, like in an episode, you know you're good. You're taken care of with that. I feel like Claude Atkins is like the same way. He's there, and it's like, this is going to be not just a quality program, but a really strong episode of this quality program. just sort of like that litmus test.
Let's talk a little music. And Beach Boys get a lot of credit and acclaim for Pet Sounds, the Smile album that was never completed, but not a lot of discussion about, I think, a great album from 65, Summer Days and Summer Nights, that includes some classic Beach Boys hits, but also a couple that I have on my list of favorite Beach Boys songs of all time that were never released as singles, Girl Don't Tell Me and Let Him Run Wild.
Oh, yeah, those are beautiful songs. They really are. And we've talked about Wild Honey before. I think we did that in connection with The Fall. So
right. That's
why this was on my mind, is like, because that's almost like this. That was a late summer, early fall concept album, sonically. And this is a summer concept album. And I like the idea of the summer days and summer nights, because there is a dichotomy to summer. It's like the heat and the humidity during the day, and it's gone at night, and it can even be like light jacket weather type of thing. And I think that this record captures both sides of that equation. Like, there was an Everly Brothers album called The Two Sides of an Evening. And it was like when you had a sleepover, and it was like the girls, and it was like, this is the fun part. And then there's like the Did You Kiss Like Billy Wagner type of part later. And this is sort of the summer version of that. And it's this concept album. The Beach Boys didn't get credit for that. They didn't get credit for it until like the official kind of concept album with Pet Sounds. But they were creating albums for a band known as a singles band at the time that were remarkably pithy and cohesive. And then there were some like odd moments too on these concept albums, like I'm Bugged at My Old Man, right? That's a really strange song. It's not what you'd expect maybe from the Beach Boys, that kind of humor. And it's still like a highly melodic composition. But it was, to me, one of those records where it seemed that they were moving in a direction that was more Beatles-esque, where it wasn't just about, okay, let's do some singles, let's have some filler. Because really, I think with this album, as you mentioned, the richest cuts are the actual album cuts, not just like the singles that are part of the album.
And finally, let's move to the world of art and talk about Jacob Wrestling with the Angel.
This is another one I picked for now, with summer sort of getting into high gear, because it's like the most verdant landscape you're going to see in a painting, by this painting being by Delacroix. It's a painting that means a lot to me. I think it's probably my favorite painting. And it has a narrative woven into it in this verdant setting where the color just explodes, where you have Jacob, who is actually wrestling with a celestial being. That's how determined he is. He's on this path, and he's had this strange origin story where he's in the womb with his twin brother, and the brother is going to get out. And what Jacob does, he's like, no, I want to be first. I like to compete. And he grabs his brother and pulls him out of the way. So he's like, he's out first. He's kind of like the alpha child. And that's why it resonates with me, because it's about really somebody who's not going to be kept back, no matter how insurmountable the resistance in front of them might seem. And that's the symbolism of this painting, that you have this wrestling match, like you're on your way, you're on your quest, and lo, there is this angel that you have to do battle with, which is just a strange kind of notion, because it's not like the angel is of hell, and it means this person, this great ill will. But still, there's like this respect factor, like this proving ground. It's a painting of a verdant proving ground. And you don't know exactly why they have to have this fight. There's this ritualistic quality to it. But it's also this quality of, I'm not going to be denied. I'm going to press on no matter what, no matter the level of resistance I have to deal with.
Colin Fleming, joining us every Tuesday on Downtown. Check out his work at ColinFlemingLit.com. Appreciate it, my friend. Good luck tracking down Columbus's head there in the drink, and we'll check in next week.
Sounds good, sir.